It's the Deseret News Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 298. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. In this episode, Matt and I talk about the QB situation and what we think might happen Saturday, as well as beyond. We also talk about the future of offensive coordinator Ty Detmer. And is Kalani Sitake on the hot seat? And lastly, we break down the Mississippi State game and talk about what chances we think the Cougars have against the Bulldogs. This is the Deseret News Rise and Shout Podcast. Catch this show and other podcasts at DeseretNews.com/podcast. Find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/Rise and Shout. And listen to us right now. Do you have your Last Jedi tickets yet? They just went on sale.
How recently did they go on sale? I guess I just answered the question by asking that.
In the last few minutes.
No, I do not.
I'm refreshing Fandango as we speak, but for some reason it's not working. I think they're a little overloaded. Will you be going opening weekend to The Last Jedi?
I'd like to go opening weekend.
You'd like to? You know you get to choose that, right? Like, it's up to you.
You own your own destiny.
Make a choice, you can.
Let's open up Fandango. I have a hard time saying Fandango.
It sounds funny from you, does it not? Should I do the whole episode as Yoda? How annoying do you think that would get? On a scale of 0 to Detmer, how annoying would it be for me to do the entire episode as Yoda?
So just to be clear, so if on the Detmer end of the scale is like super annoying and 0 is not very annoying?
Correct.
Or 0 is not annoying and Detmer is super annoying?
0 is not annoying and Detmer is super annoying. I think we need to change the scale, don't you? That's too soon.
I'm going to go and say Detmer level annoying.
Detmer level annoying.
Yeah, Fandango's not loading at all.
Yeah, Fandango's a mess right now. They apparently were not prepared to sell movie tickets.
So Fandango?
Well, Fandango, let's just go ahead and get this show started. We'll come back and talk about us getting tickets later. You'll be on some diatribe and I'll be ignoring you. I'll go get tickets. Same thing, right?
You'll tell me that you got them, and then I'll ignore you for a little while, and I'll sign up and get my tickets.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so let's go ahead and
Standard fare.
Let's jump right into the CougarFan.com. Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, women's volleyball beat St. Mary's and Pacific on the road.
There we go.
They are number 7 now in the country. They have Portland and Gonzaga this week in Provo. The Pilots are 13-5 and 4-2 in the West Coast Conference. Gonzaga's interesting. They are 11-7, but a perfect 6-0 in West Coast Conference play. Free T-shirts to the first 300 fans at Thursday's match against Portland. So if you live in Provo, go see the Cougars beat up on the Pilots, huh?
Yeah, I'm always in for a free T-shirt.
Yeah, me too. Love free T-shirts. Closet is full of them. Matt, so they improved. Women's volleyball, as I said, is ranked 7th in all the land. 17-1, 6-0 in West Coast Conference play. Women's soccer put a beat down on St. Mary's, took out maybe some of the frustrations of the year. 4-1 victory. They go on the road to play Pacific and San Francisco this weekend. They improved to 4-5-3. Matt, the NFL for BYU is a hot mess right now, except for Kyle Van Noy. But Jamal Williams gets hurt and comes back and plays in this game, got hurt a week ago, and they ended up picking the other rookie running back who had a great game.
Yeah, that's awkward.
So that's terrible. But Kyle Van Noy continued to be Kyle Van Noy. 7 tackles, 0.5 sack. He's a force for the Patriots in a game which they did not give up 40 points. They did not.
That seems like a step in the right direction.
Well, it's funny. I remember reading on Twitter before that Patriots game, like, as well as the Buccaneers are playing, they're going to at least score 30 points. And that's the thing. You just never know with stuff, right? Like, there's no, just because a couple of weeks have seemed to indicate something does not write it in stone, right?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, you don't really know what you have until halfway through or all the way through October, really.
Yeah, Yeah, and that's true to a certain extent in college football. We'll get to that in a moment. But Matt, you have some big news. You've hit a goal.
Yeah, so an amazing thing happened Sunday night. Some of you may be aware, where I've been raising money for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention as part of my efforts preparing for the New York City Marathon on November 5th. And we had set a goal to raise $3,500 by the race. And as of today, actually, we're at $3,525. So we hit the fundraising goal, which is very, very exciting. I'm excited to see where we go from here between now and the end of October. We've got still a little bit more time to raise some money and help the whole team get to their team fundraising goal. And I've got about 26 days between now and running the New York City Marathon, which is going to be pretty amazing event.
Yeah, for sure. It's amazing, Matt. So congratulations on hitting your goal. And there's a couple of folks that listen to this show that contributed to that. So
yeah, really, and a handful, a few, and I really do appreciate everybody's support on this. As we've talked about, this is just an important cause for us and for so many people, and it's impacted. Really, if you look and if you look around, it really has impacted a lot more people than sometimes you realize.
Yeah.
So it's been a really good opportunity to be able to be involved in raising some money and some awareness.
So Matt, we now have to talk about football. Or maybe we should talk about basketball first. Should we talk about basketball first before we talk about football? Because at least basketball is still filled with hope. Still filled with that we're 0-0 and maybe we're good feeling that we used to have for football.
If we're not good, we don't know that yet.
Yeah.
And that's a special time.
So Nathan Cunningham on The Lawless Republic had an interesting article that I'm going to reference here where he basically says that the Cougars have tons of versatility because of the way the roster is constructed. So he came up with several lineups, Matt. You pick your favorite, okay? I'm going to give you his lineups. You tell me which lineup of his five lineups you are most excited about seeing these five on the floor at the same time, okay?
All right, let's see what we got here.
All right. You okay?
All right, it's a special time.
It's a special time for every boy. All right, small ball lineup. TJ Hawes, Nick Emery, Elijah Bryant, Zach Selyus, and Yoli Childs. Kind of an interesting lineup. Definitely small, though Selyus and Bryant can play a little bit bigger. And obviously Hawes is a tall perimeter guy. Lockdown defensive lineup. That's Nick Emery, Jashire Hartnett, Kajon Brown, Peyton Dastrup, and Yoli Childs. I like that one. I like lockdown lineups. We'll get back to that in a second. Big, small lineup, which I don't understand exactly what that means, but a little bit more size, basically, than the small ball lineup. TJ Hawes, Elijah Bryant, Zach Selyus, and then Dalton Nixon instead of Emery, and then Yoli Childs, who's basically in every one of these lineups, I think. Yes, he is. That tells you what Nate Cunningham thinks, and I tend to agree. Going big lineup. So the big lineup is Bryant, Selyus, Dalton Nixon, Peyton Dastrup, and Yoli Childs. And then the last one he has is the three-point shooting lineup. Jashire Hartnett, Hawes, Emery, Selyus, and Childs. And there could be, he points out, four different players capable of being 40% three-point shooters on that group. So Matt, pick your lineup. Which of Cunningham's lineups are you most excited about?
So I think there's a couple of these that are really compelling for me.
A couple of them? You get to pick one. That was the game. You pick one. Oh, fine. All right, so pick a couple of them.
If I've got to do that, then I'm going to go with the big small ball lineup. And mostly it's because I like the way he described it, right? So you get a little bit more size, but you're still keeping some guys on the wings that are capable shooters.
Yes.
And so you're striking an important balance there. That I think we're going to need if you look, especially when we get into conference play. But I'm not totally against this three-point lineup. I think that could be a lot of fun.
That could be a lot of fun and a difficult lineup to double Childs in the post, right?
Yes.
Like, if you don't have somebody that can guard Childs one-on-one, that's a lineup that could really be problematic. So I like that one. I actually really like the lockdown lineup. I kind of said that before. But I would love to see a lineup where we get a bunch of turnovers and where people have trouble scoring on the perimeter. I would love to see that. And that group could do that. It's hard to know because we haven't seen Hartnett and Brown play. And Dastrup, I'm still not 100% sure what we've got with Dastrup, right? But assuming he's as good on defense and it's good to have a second rebounder in there, right? But I don't know. I like some of these lineups that Cunningham threw together here. He points this out at the beginning of the article, Matt. There's very low expectations. I'm not on BYU Twitter. I'm not hearing anything about BYU, about the basketball team, hardly at all.
Part of that is there's so much angst around football that nobody really wants to talk about basketball yet.
Yeah. But if last year there would still have been a bunch of buzz, even with all of this negativity around football. But with as kind of mediocre as the team was last year, and losing, the team's best player to the pros, there's just a lot of there's just not much expectation. So does that help them, or is that irrelevant? Do you think that potentially helps them?
I don't think it doesn't hurt them. I don't know how helpful it really is. I feel like that's one of those distraction type of things that really at that level shouldn't sway that shouldn't be what takes the team in one direction or the other, right?
Yeah, you'd hope not, but I don't know.
But yeah, maybe it does, right? Maybe it does. But did you literally just yawn a little bit when you said mediocre?
I did not. I never yawn. Yes, I yawned. I'm tired.
You literally, when talking about the team from last year, you said,
well, they were,
this
they,
team is, and you yawned. You said they were mediocre last year. You yawned.
They are kind of yawn worthy last year. Don't you think? Does that mean? Is that being mean?
A little bit.
I mean, oh, stop it.
So what do you expect this year, baby?
I think they're going to be better. No joke. I think sometimes basketball is about chemistry more than it is about talent, right? Like football, I believe, is about talent and coaching. And not that basketball is not about coaching, because it certainly is. But for whatever reason, there was never a good rhythm on offense last year for BYU. And they have defensive issues too. I think this year, I think you could see that be turned around. And quite frankly, if Emery's not getting it done, which he struggled a lot last year, I think he'll see his minutes reduced. But they didn't have the luxury to do that last year. There wasn't anybody to lean on. But now you've kind of filled this perimeter out and basically made this the Yoli Childs, as Cunningham's lineups look like. Yoli Childs combined with whoever else you want to put out there, right? Now, that makes me a little nervous because I worry about how deep we are, in the interior. But, last year we were all excited because we thought we were so deep, and then it didn't end up really playing out that way.
But it does really seem that chemistry was part of the issue last year, right? I'm not trying to say there was somebody in the locker room or anything that was a problem. That's not necessarily what that means.
I'm talking about chemistry on the court. I'm not talking about locker room chemistry. I'm talking about the ability to flow together as an offense. Whether they liked each other or not, I don't get into that stuff because I don't know. But I can say that on the court, they didn't. For those three guys who had played together since they were young, there didn't seem to be a lot of wow, we played together a lot and we're running these fast breaks and throwing passes and we know exactly where everyone's going to be. You know what I mean? There wasn't any of that that I think we all thought we would see. So I don't know. Interesting. So Matt, should we talk about football now?
I think we can talk about football now.
So Boise State, how about Troy Warner? I mean, Fred Warner and who else do we want to talk about? Tonga?
Oh, yeah.
Those guys are awesome, huh? How about those guys?
Are great.
Yeah. Yeah. How about that? And Taki Taki, he's pretty awesome. And Troy Warner looked good on the outside. So, all right. So that's the Boise State
game. There we go. That's pretty much it. Not much else to see here, everybody. Just carry on.
So Matt, is it just silly at this point if either of us ever take the over on over 300 yards of total offense the rest of the year?
Which game there are you going to take it on?
Let's see. I think there is at least one game where I will take the over on that. I'll take it on San Jose State at home. And UMass at home. I will take over 300 yards
in total offense in both those games.
They're both terrible teams.
Probably talk me into that.
I'm not feeling great about the Fresno State game on the road. Fresno State looks okay. I'm certainly not going to take it, you know, spoiler alert, not going to take it for this Saturday against Mississippi State. I don't know, maybe at Hawaii? I could be one of those crazy two terrible teams that end up scoring 40 points apiece.
I don't even know what to think.
I don't know what to think about that either. But, Matt, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about this Boise State game because, quite frankly, it was painful. So let's move on. As I don't know if our mom ever said this or not, but they say that in is it Bambi, right? If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all.
It's Thumper, I believe, is the character in Bambi. So I just want to point out, like, we're at a weird place in the podcast when you're quoting Bambi.
You know, I actually really don't like that movie. It may be my least favorite Disney film. Oh, by the way, Fandango's working again.
Oh, there you go.
So everyone's going to listen to me buy tickets. Except they're saying that, oh my gosh, you can go to a 6 a.m. movie on Friday, December 15th.
Who's going to go to a movie at 6 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah.
Star Wars fans.
Who's going to do that? That'd be dumb.
Are you going to go see a movie at 6 a.m.?
I would never do that. That would be dumb. No, I would not. I would not go see a movie at 6 a.m.
You're really thinking about it, aren't you?
Well, if I'm going to see it twice that day, kind of makes some sense. Don't you think?
I guess.
Oh man, they're already selling out. This is crazy. Anyway, all right. So, let's see here, Matt. Season so far. Let's kind of recap some things with some tweet bag questions.
Tweet bag.
So Gary Payne, that's at Fast Break. Oh my gosh. At Fast Break GP says, are we in full rebuilding mode now? Will Critchlow get a start? Tanner equals heaps. Only one possession of 2015, Tanner, and he's referencing that 48-yard drive to start the game. Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag painbag. Matt, there's a lot here. We'll save the Critchlow thing for later because we're going to talk about the QBs. Matt, it's college football. You're often in rebuilding mode. And rebuilding mode can happen, can turn around very, very quickly. Case in point, check out Purdue this year. So Matt, are we in rebuilding mode?
We're in something. I don't know that I'm ready to call this full-on rebuilding mode. I think we'll have an idea if that's where the coaches are when we see who gets trotted out at quarterback on Saturday. But that decision really could come down to health. We already know Tanner was only at 60%, at least according to him, last Saturday. You could tell he really wasn't feeling the mobility. But a 60% Tanner, do you take a 60% Tanner over a Critchlow?
You don't take a 60% anyone. That was Tanner's assessment, not the athletic trainers and the coaching staff, right? That's him talking to a reporter, okay? That's what he said. If he truly is just 60%, you don't – I mean, I guess you take a 60% NFL MVP Steve Young, right, over the group we have today. But you don't take a 60%er ever, do you? Like, as a quarterback? I don't take a 60 percenter.
I think you take Robbie Bosco with his legs in splints.
At that point in the season, maybe. Maybe. And your offense was awesome. Okay? The offense is
not been
awesome.
And he was a huge piece of that, right? I mean, it, yeah. So...
So on Facebook, Spencer Thurman has this to say. Not a question, but he wanted to respond to something from the last podcast. I, too, have seen a ton of Twitter hate for those of us who have chosen not to watch the Cougars this season, calling us bandwagon fans. This is false. Though actually, Spencer, technically it might actually be true, but I'll get to that in a second. I have not switched alliances. I love the Cougars, always will. I simply cannot watch this team play this poorly. I find myself looking for reasons to be out of the house on game day. If I watch, I will get angry, yell at the TV, and possibly get divorced, become depressed, and spiral into alcoholism. That's how much I love the team. So back off, Twitterverse. Hashtag tweetbag. Hashtag climb on in. Hashtag I'm done with Detmer. Matt, we talked about this a little time. I don't have any problem. If this is that miserable for them, like it is for Spencer, that's fine. You don't have to watch. I'm not going to question somebody's fandom. What do you think?
No, I'm not going to question somebody's fandom. It's not the way I roll. Right? I'm going to watch these games. And that's just and I like we've talked about before. I mean, am I going to plan my life around the UMass game if we haven't won a game between now and then? No, I might watch that one on DVR.
But you're planning your life around Saturday's game.
Yeah, I'm not to the extent that originally, you know, I was going to be making the drive up there, but my shift in plans has nothing to do with the team's win-loss record as much as it has to do with some other things I have going on. But, you know, because that's a 5-hour drive, and when you live where I live, you just don't see them very much, right? So to have that opportunity is one thing. But coming back to where he's coming from, right? I don't think you say he's not a real fan. It's hard to watch your team struggle.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't think that watching the team lose several games in a row is some badge of courage that makes me or you or somebody else a quote, better fan in some way.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. There are lots of different kinds of fans, right? Some that are very, very casual. Probably none of them are listening to this podcast, right? Maybe. But you know, some are very casual, only tune in if they're winning and it's fun, right? Some, and then you've got on that spectrum, and spectrum may not even be the right word because it might be more like a, I don't know, like a spider web of fans. But you know what I'm saying? Like, so sometimes when people are a different kind of fan, you get kind of, oh, you're not a true fan. It's just like chill with that. Like, why do we need to snipe at each other? Right? Like What good comes out of that? Like, nothing. Now, technically, though, Spencer, a bandwagon, you probably are, by strict definition of the term, a bandwagon fan. That doesn't mean you're hopping on a different bandwagon, but you just get on the wagon when things are going the way you want them to. And that's okay.
Yeah, but see, you know what? I would consider the term bandwagon. It'd be, like, let's say you live in Utah, and... You know nothing about the team.
Yes.
And they come along and have a magical season, and now you own a jersey and you're going to games and all this. That's a bandwagon fan.
Well,
right?
You're right.
Somebody who comes in and out depending on how the team's doing and their level and interest maybe ebbs and flows, like the tide or the phases of the moon.
You are right. Despite that last part that went right way off the rails.
I don't know what happened there.
I don't know what happened either. But bandwagon fan, actually, I am wrong. Bandwagon fan is, by Urban Dictionary and a few other places, someone that just becomes a fan because they're winning. Like, you know.
Like the Seahawks or the Golden State Warriors.
Now.
Entire fan base.
Let me be very clear. That's not true of all of their fan base, by the way. But
that's right. Steve Largent was a Seahawks fan before they got good again.
That's true. But let me be clear. I'm not actually even against, as an adult, bandwagon fans anymore. I just don't care why someone joined up with the team. You know, as a true Red Sox fan who watched them when they were terrible, I get why people get annoyed when their team gets good and a bunch of other people start wearing the hat. I get it. But in the end, I just don't spend a lot of emotional energy on that anymore. Well, Matt, let's talk about the QBs and Detmer for a second, the offense as a whole even, okay? So we got a bunch of TweetBag questions here, so let's get to them.
Yeah, this is a hot topic.
This is a slightly hot topic. Chase Blyle, that's at Chase Blyle on Twitter, says, can we hashtag TweetBag this tweet? I don't think people are being unjustly hard on Detmer. I think our offense is unjustly bad. He then references a tweet, and I'm going to pull it up here so I can reference it, where basically it's from, I forget which site this is from, because the original got knocked off, but it's basically offensive rankings for the year, some analytical ranking, and we're third to last. Okay? And this was backing up my original point that if this wasn't Ty Detmer and this was a different school, he'd already be fired, which I still believe is the case, by the way. I'll stand by that. If his name wasn't Detmer and this was a different school, he'd be gone already. I mean, the offense is that atrociously bad. I mean, how many times have I asked for a coach to be fired in the 7 years we've been doing this podcast?
I'm not sure, but it's not a lot.
Doman and now Detmer. That's it. I never asked for a Nye to be fired, Bronco, even Jaime Hill when the defense was going bad. But his getting fired.
But he had a lot of other stuff going right. on. That
Though the
his
defense
fire.
Wasn't playing particularly well and then played a lot better after, if I'm remembering that right, statistically played a lot better after Bronco took it back over. My point is, and I think Chase's point is, Detmer's hot seat is not some ridiculous hot take because things aren't going very well. Fair?
That's fair.
Do you believe if his last name wasn't Detmer, he'd already be fired?
No.
Okay. So you think that part of my hot take is off?
I believe that if he is not fired at the end of this season, that will be true.
Okay.
I think there's a philosophy, right, around making a decision to terminate a coordinator position in the middle of the season, and what does that really get you? Do you have somebody on the staff who's ready to take over those responsibilities? Is there somebody out there who's available that you can hire right now to replace him?
Yes.
And do you feel like you will be in a better place, you know, when you travel to Starkville or to Greenville or to any other ville? And, you know, on whatever the game is left on your schedule, do you think you will be better off with whatever your alternative is running the offense?
So if the
answer isn't yes, I think you hold on to him till the end of the season, and then you go and then you go find somebody, right? But right now, if you were to fire him now and try and hire a full-time replacement, you only have who's available.
So Matt, I would almost always agree with you, except for the fact that we're basically the worst offense in college football. So you can't get worse. You can't get worse.
You can't get worse in rankings, but you can get worse.
There isn't anywhere to go. We had a game where we didn't cross the 50. Like, this is like you're playing your nephew who's first time ever playing, and I mean like your 6-year-old nephew. First time playing NCAA football. I'm not joking. I'm not even trying to be funny. This is that bad. So usually I'd agree with you because there's not a lot to gain. You're not going to, unless you had like an heir apparent on the staff, or in the case like when Jaime Hill, and I know there was other issues too when he got fired, but you've got a head coach who used to be a coordinator of that position who can just step in and start calling the plays, right? We don't have that. Kalani Sitake is not an offensive coordinator by trade, though, quite frankly, he couldn't do much worse if he decided to throw his hat into the ring. And, you know, so normally I'd agree with you. The one thing I'm worried about, and this will come up a little bit later, is recruiting. And players on the offensive players, what talent we do have, deciding maybe they should transfer. And firing the coordinator.
That part's getting scary.
Firing the coordinator is a clear signal that we will not tolerate this kind of offense. So I get what you're saying, and I actually agree that I think because of all the things you said, it is highly unlikely that Detmer gets canned before the end of the year. But I will tell you what, if he isn't fired at the end of the year, I think the program has set itself up for a big disappointment. Because I think recruiting any offensive players over the next 2 years is going to be extremely difficult with the offense we've just put on the field.
I mean, so let's get, you know, kind of specific. So do you fire Detmer and you have Steve Clark run the offense? I mean, you're looking at a guy, you know, he's the tight ends coach, right? And he's like 4'11" or whatever he is. But he's got some experience, offensive coordinator at Southern Utah.
Yes.
For what, 5 years? A couple years at Weber State.
Yes.
Passing game coordinator at St. Mary's.
Yes.
Offensive coordinator for Provo High.
I'm telling you, yes. The answer is yes. Whoever else on the staff. By the way, he has more college coordinator experience than Detmer does, right?
Right.
The answer is yes. Am I excited about that prospect? No, I'm not. I'm not excited about that prospect. But again, I think you have to signal something. And the good news is we're likely to get better just because of who we're going to play, right? What I don't want to happen is we pile up a bunch of yards in the last 4 or 5 games, and then everybody goes, convinces themselves, oh, well, Detmer's good at this. He figured it out, right? It's the problem that everybody had with Heaps, remember, back in his freshman year. Oh, he figured it out. No, he played against a bunch of terrible teams. And that's the thing that, but to be fair, the look on Kalani's face at that end of that game and some of his comments about the offense and Mangum, I don't think there's any chance of that, by the way. I think there's change coming at the end of the year, if not before. But anyway, so Matt, a couple questions on Mangum now in the quarterback position. So Hector Liv, that's at Naletto on Twitter, and then Johnny Ashton on Facebook. Both basically have kind of a similar question about Detmer. So is the emergence of Critchlow bad for Tanner? I don't know if there's emergence, by the way, because for me, emergence really only happens in games. Or is this a signal that Mangum's performance is bad? Hashtag climb on in, by the way, Hector. Then he says he knows, this is Johnny Ashton, he knows Mangum's been dealing with injury, but did he look any worse last week versus earlier in the season? I would say no, right? Did he look any worse? I mean, he couldn't move as well, but like in the end, the results were about the same, right?
Correct.
So Matt, what are they going to do? Assume at this point for Mississippi State that everybody's healthy. Who starts? Hodge?
Hodge starts, if everybody's right? Healthy, that's who I'd start.
Hodge starts, right? I mean, based on Kalani's comments and other things, I get it's a super small sample size, but the best two drives of the entire freaking year take out Portland State, okay, for a second, or those two drives against Utah State that Hodge ran, right?
Yeah.
It's a small sample size. So
tiny sample size, but you only can go with the data that you have in front of you. And I have to assume, based on what we have on game film and what we've seen, that there's going to be something similar to that that's played out in practice.
Yep. I would think so. So let's talk about Critchlow for a second. Let's assume Hodge is not ready to go, and Mangum is still hobbled by injury. Okay, so they decide to start Critchlow instead against Mississippi State. Which, good luck to you, Mr. Critchlow, in your first collegiate start.
Oh, man.
But here's the thing. How, on a scale of 0 to 10, 0 being don't care, 10 being really annoyed by this, how annoyed are you about them burning Critchlow's redshirt year?
0.
Me too. Why are people worried
about
this?
We put way too much stock into this, the redshirt year and being all strategic about it. You know what? That a redshirt, I don't even know where to begin here. But you have to do what the right decision is for the team. You've got to try and win games. You've
got to try and put the guy this year.
Win games now.
This is not, you can't tank. This isn't the pros. If you tank in college football and just say, let's save it for next year, you hurt recruiting.
And you're tanking for a a year that's fictional, right? You're tanking in order to preserve a year of eligibility on a player, and you don't really know how good he's going to be at this level. Let's just back up for a minute and look at the experience we've had with quarterbacks over the last several years. Critchlow might be phenomenal. He might be a dumpster fire. We just don't know,
Heaps and Mangum were supposed to be the next big thing. And Mangum's story's not finished yet.
I'm not calling any of the quarterbacks we've dealt with over the past several years a dumpster fire, except for one.
And he wasn't. Riley Nelson was not a dumpster fire.
I'm not talking about Riley Nelson. I've come full circle on Riley Nelson. I love Riley Nelson.
Riley Nelson
is one of my favorite Twitter followers.
Who are you talking about?
Riley Nelson is exactly the type of guy you want in the huddle on your football team from a personality standpoint. Riley Nelson is the guy that you want. I like Riley Nelson. So Heaps, I feel bad about the stuff I said about Riley Nelson back in the day.
Heaps is the only dumpster fire?
Oh, Heaps was a disaster.
Yeah, Heaps was a disaster. And we don't mean anything against Jake Heaps. It just on the field, it was bad.
I think he was mishandled by the coaching staff. I think that's part of it. I think there were some personal issues that were going on that we didn't all know about at the time. There was a lot going on there.
Bad situation. So Johnny says he thinks we should give Mangum a few more weeks as the starter, assuming he's healthy. Johnny, I actually agree with you. I think you give Mangum another couple weeks. I think you give him through the East Carolina game to see if he can get a spark.
But you know what? But he won't be.
I don't think he will.
He's not healthy.
Well, he's not
healthy. This Saturday, he's not healthy. And I don't know what the percentage is. He says 60. You know, maybe the coaching staff felt it was higher than that. But he won't be healthy.
Well, and I think you're absolutely right. If Hodge is healthy, I think he's the starter. Right or wrong, I think that's what happens. Because guess what? When the offense is this bad, quarterbacks change. That's just what happens. I don't know of an instance in college football where an offense as bad as this hasn't changed their quarterback. For performance reasons, forget about injuries, right? That's just what happens. It may not be fair. You may say, well, why don't you swap out the whole offensive line, and why don't you go to the third string wide receivers, and why is it the quarterback? That is just the way it is. And the quarterback is the one person, besides the center, of course, that touches the ball every play. But let's be fair. We've already played five quarterbacks this year. So, I get one of them was a Wildcat guy.
And what are we, the Houston Texans? I mean, this is crazy.
It's crazy. And guess what? It could end up being six. I'm just saying, I don't know what's going to happen the rest of the year. And we've already had some injuries. But what if Critchlow went down on Saturday? Who plays then? Do you just go Wildcat?
I don't know.
Do you just go Wildcat the rest of the game?
I don't know what you do.
By the way, last game. How many times did we run the football?
Oh, I have to switch tabs here and get to that.
23 times. How many times did we throw the football? 37 times. 37. Critchlow's last four
Critchlow,
passes.
There we go. Yep, 37 times.
The balance was good until we got down low. Our biggest problem right now is we have no offensive identity. Part of me says we're a running team, but we're not a running team. We don't run the ball that effectively. And we're certainly not a passing team. So I just look at this and go,
Adam, those are the two kinds of teams that there are.
I know.
There's not like a third option.
I know there's not a third option. But we're like the 125th best offense. We're the third worst offense in the country. I can't even believe I'm saying that out loud about a BYU team. I just can't believe it. I'm yelling at the listeners.
The level of competition that we've been up against. And I'll even go out there and say, and with the injuries, right? Because the big story injury from an injury perspective offensively is Tanner.
Okay. Stop with the injuries. I'm going to say I'm done with the injuries. Injuries happen to college football teams every freaking year. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Even with the injuries, this is it's crazy.
Iowa State just beat Oklahoma, and they've had injuries this year. I'm tired of the injury thing. Oh man, it's an injury. Blah 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 blah. That happens. Every team loses people. LSU lost Geis. They went on a bit of a losing streak, and then they came back and beat Florida this weekend. Okay? Good teams overcome injuries. Yeah, is it keeping LSU or other teams with key injuries from having a special season? Absolutely. And that stinks. We've been there, right? As BYU fans, we've had years, you know, 2001 towards the end when Staley got hurt. You know what I mean? Like, we've been there. It stinks. But it should not make you a team that's 1-5. And the only team you've beaten is a bad FCS team. And you struggled in that game offensively.
And if you blade them today, you might not win.
Don't say that out loud. That's mean. But it's probably true.
No, they've got a whole another month of football under their belts.
So Matt, we talked about recruiting. Bad news came out this weekend on the recruiting front. Two BYU commits flipped to the Utes. Harriman, offensive lineman Jaron Kump, and then and his teammate, defensive lineman Tavita Fotu, both flipped. So Matt, it's bad timing, and it may or may not be related because people flip all the time, right? Even when you're winning. This is bad. This looks bad, though, right?
Oh, yeah. It's not a good look, especially since they're both local.
And according to the rankings, we look like the 50th best class next year if people stay committed. Now, there's a lot in there. Is it McKee, the quarterback, five-star quarterback that's still deciding?
Yeah.
There could be a couple players that decide or flip that could change that ranking substantially. But that ranking smells like a Bronco recruiting ranking. Maybe even a little worse. So this is there's something building here that's bad long term. So the question is Kalani Sitake, we got a few questions on this about Gary Anderson leaving Oregon State and other people that could be head coaches. Matt, is Kalani Sitake's seat hot?
I don't think Kalani's seat is hot.
I think it's slightly warm, but he does not get fired after this year, even if we go 3-10.
I'd be really surprised if Sitake got fired. I'd be really surprised if Detmer didn't.
Yep, I agree with both of those statements. I want Sitake to be given more time as a head coach. I don't think you fire a head coach after 2 years, unless there's some extenuating circumstance, you know, unless
there's some crazy, weird controversy or
former assistant of what's his face? Who's the coach at Louisville that's just gotten fired?
Oh, geez. I can't even keep track anymore with all the weird coaching stuff that's going on right now.
Whoa, he coached the Celtics. I blocked him.
Pitino.
What a joker. Anyway.
Yeah, but listen, man, there's a lot of, like, it's college basketball's a mess right now.
It's not good. It's not good. So anyway, I wouldn't worry about who the candidates are to potentially place Kalani because he's got another couple years. So
I don't see us going out, and I don't think we go out and fire Detmer on Monday of next week and hire Gary Anderson. I mean, you're only going to do that if that was the guy that you wanted anyway. And I don't think that it is.
No, so I know people are getting antsy, and I knew this would happen if we started 1-5, that people would be asking for Kalani's head, all the goodwill that he has gained. In the end, you just have to win, right? Like, Bronco would have had everybody's good graces if he had won 10 games another time or two. Just saying. So, Matt, let's preview Mississippi State. Baby. All right?
Mississippi State. The state right. of Mississippi.
So according to Football Outsiders, Matt, they are the 28th best team in the country, 48th best offense, and 25th best defense. So they'll be probably similar to, I don't know, LSU's defense as far as quality goes, give or take a little bit. How does that make you feel?
Make me feel good if I were them.
Yeah. Special teams, another good special teams. But by the way, we held that really good kick returner for Boise State in check last week. I was impressed. Wasn't enough, obviously, to win, but But I was impressed. I was afraid there was going to, you know, if we did play well enough to win, we were going to lose because we give up a special teams touchdown. We did not. So
that turned out not to be the difference maker.
No, not the difference maker. So on offense, Matt, they have struggled the last two games in their losses to Georgia and Auburn after their impressive start. Georgia and Auburn are good teams, good defenses. I think both of those games were on the road. SEC is tough, and it's still the Nick Fitzgerald show. I don't. Our defense is not as good as Georgia or Auburn, though. I think they're okay. Okay, good defense. I think Mississippi State, I don't think I'm making a bold statement, gets a much better offensive showing this week against BYU.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I mean, these guys is 422 yards a game.
Yeah. But a lot of that came against teams that aren't very good, to be fair. Right. But we're not very good, so maybe that's more of a good comparison. Besides Fitzgerald, watch running back Aris Williams. He's got a little over 400 yards, 5.5 yards per carry. He struggled the last 2 weeks. But I think because of Fitzgerald mobility, that's going to open up some lanes for Williams against the Cougar defense. So I think he'll have a bounce back game. On defense, Matt, they've given up 900 yards in the past 2 weeks. You know what's the right remedy for that? Playing us.
Oh, man.
I'm not joking. If I were a Mississippi State team, I'd be really excited about our defense, about their defense getting a chance to pin their ears back against us. The player to watch for them defensively is sophomore defensive lineman Jeffrey Simmons. 6'4", 301. He's got 27 tackles and 3.5 sacks so far this year. Big guy. He will be tough to wrangle there, Matt. I don't know what to do with over-unders. They're favored by 22.5 points. So you take
On ESPN, they got a 95% chance, I think, of winning.
Yes. So do you have the Cougars within 23 points of the Bulldogs?
That's probably a fair line because I think it's going to be about a 3-touchdown game.
I am taking BYU with that line. I think that line is an overreaction line. Now, you may say,
I'm taking BYU there, but it's close.
It's close. Matt, over under 275 yards for BYU. Notice I didn't do 300.
I'm going under.
I'm also going under. For the love of all that's holy.
This is happening. This is actually happening.
So does who plays quarterback factor into how you feel about our chances of winning this game?
Yes.
So Hodge gives us the best chance, in your opinion?
Yes.
Would you rather see 60-70% Tanner Mangum or roll the dice on 100%, but we don't know what we've got in Critchlow?
Wow, that is like pick your poison type of a proposition. I have no idea what we have with Critchlow, but a 60% Tanner,
I just don't
think you can do it.
I think if he's closer to full health, then I would go with Tanner. But if it's the Mangum we saw against Boise State, if that's the same level of health, then I'm going to say go with Critchlow because I just think having somebody that can move around a little bit and plant their feet in a healthy way is better. So, Matt, prediction time.
Listen, let me just say this. If Critchlow is not a better option than a 60% healthy Tanner Mangum, then we don't need to be worried about burning his red shirt.
Well, but to be fair, I mean, he's like 4 or 5 months off his mission, right?
No, I understand. But I think you understand my point.
Yeah. And by the way, because I know this is going to come up from folks, well, Tanner Mangum was the best freshman quarterback we've ever had. Guys, we're talking about like 3 people, okay?
It's Drew Miller, Jay Keeps, and Tanner Mangum.
Yeah, so I don't understand what that even means. Like, well, he's the best freshman quarterback we ever had. Who cares? Like, so what? Like, I don't, it's It's hard for me to
but
say.
Is it a Tanner problem or is it a scheme problem?
Well, I
that's going to be the debate. That's going to be the debate for a long time about this season last season.
Here's the thing. It's a scheme problem. Okay. I think we can all say that for certain. It is a scheme problem. We have a scheme problem. I think as bad as your offense is, you can't blame that all on the players. Okay. Or even bad quarterback play. But there have been some wide open wide receivers in the last in this season. And Criddle and others have shown it on tape. And they're getting missed. Now, that's also could be a scheme issue, right? But Mangum locks on Bushman, and he did it to the team's detriment on Friday night, right? Through two interceptions where there was nothing to Bushman, and in one of those interceptions, Shumway was wide open, just a little ways over, right? Yeah. So I think it's both. I hate to say that because I've been such a believer in Mangum. But if you look at his, you know, you look at his career, Matt, and you go by the game logs, there's not a lot of great games here in his career, right? I mean, the Nebraska game, he came in late through the Hail Mary, okay? Boise State game, a very good game, including the Hail Mary, all right? I'm not going to go through every game. But the point is, you keep going through this list, and he had a really good game against UConn, had a good game against Cincinnati, you know, tore it up against Wagner, San Jose State, okay? But, and he was decent against Missouri, which is a good team. But you go through this, Matt, and you look at it, and you go, he's got about four or five good games here. And, again, I don't know. That will be the eternal question. If he ends up getting replaced by Hodge or somebody else, that will be the question. All right, do you have any desire to pick the games for the rest of the year or just stick with what we had last week?
Oh, man.
I don't want to do it again.
I think it's just going to make me sad.
Let's just wait till after this week. We'll do it again.
Let's see what this looks like, right? Because there's so many things up in the air. We could run through this schedule, but part of what I'd want to know is, do we have a healthy Tanner Mangum? Is Ty Detmer still the offensive coordinator? Right? I mean, or is he does he stay and the play calling responsibilities go to somebody else, or they do something weird like that? There's so many things that could happen in the next week that let's just take this one game at a time.
All right. That's fair. We'll come back to it. So, Matt, let's talk about college football's elite. Let's talk about the college football playoff.
So are we going to do an official prediction on score or anything here, or you don't even want to get into that?
Oh yeah, we should probably do that. BYU loses 30-13.
All right.
And one of those, and the only touchdown is scored by the defense.
So I was going with 28-7.
Great. I like that one too. It's just really hard to be optimistic. I'll be a lot more optimistic against East Carolina. How's that? Way more optimistic.
I'll be way more optimistic against East Carolina depending on what happens this weekend.
Yeah. I mean,
We don't even need to win for me to feel better about the rest of the season. We don't need to win this game.
So, no, we don't. We don't. I just need to see some signs of life on offense.
Right.
Percent chance we make a bowl. Let me do this. Let's set an over-under on number of wins. Okay? Over-under 5.5 wins for BYU this year. I'm taking the over.
Taking the under.
I'm taking the over. But I might take the under. Over-under then, if you're taking the under, over-under 4.5 wins. Is it 5 wins or is it 4 wins?
It's 5 wins.
I think there's a non-zero chance that we're 3-10, but I think I think the real bottom is 4 wins, because I think you beat UMass East Carolina and San Jose State for sure. So that gets us to four. But I think there's a non-zero chance that you, I don't know. But anyway, it's depressing. Let's stop talking about it. All right.
See, we started doing it.
We started and doing it. I said I wasn't going to do it. I said I wasn't going to do it, and I still did it. I'm a dummy. I'm a big, big dummy. So let's talk about college football and talk about other hopes and dreams that were dashed this weekend, Matt, like the Sooners.
Oh, man.
So you and I have been on the Oklahoma bandwagon for weeks.
And we've had them. In the case of Oklahoma, it is actually a wagon.
It is actually a wagon that we jumped on. Okay? So, Matt, obviously, they're gone. I mean, is there any chance they're in the playoff?
No, it's over. Right? It's the end of the road.
The road. Boys to Men is about to start singing. You like that reference? Or no?
Wow, that's just that terrible? That was weird.
I'm sorry. I'm coming out of just talking about the rest of the season, and I'm a little shaken by it, all right? Okay, so last week you had Bama, Clemson, Penn State, and Oklahoma in your Final Four. I had Bama, Clemson, Michigan, and Oklahoma in my Final Four. Bad choices! Bad choices. So, are you sticking with everybody but Oklahoma? Are you sticking with Penn State? They're still undefeated.
Yeah, the only team I'm dropping here is Oklahoma.
All right. So who takes Oklahoma's spot in your Final Four?
See, I come down to kind of two teams here, and I waffle back and forth, and I hate myself for what I'm about to say.
Uh-oh.
It's TCU.
It's not TCU. But you can pick whoever you want. I mean, you can be wrong again. TCU, huh?
Yep.
Why does that make you hate yourself? You don't have to hate TCU because they used to be rivals of ours. Is that what you're lamenting?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, fair enough. So I have two teams to throw in that I have to throw in, Matt, because Michigan's loss as well. Any chance Michigan could still get to the playoff, by the way. I think Oklahoma's done. I don't think Michigan is technically done. I don't like their chances. I'm not keeping them in my Final Four. But they could still make it. There is a scenario where I think that happens.
Yeah, but that's tough.
But I keep Bama and Clemson because at this point, anybody that drops them, that's just dumb. Right?
Yeah, you're not paying attention if you drop either of them.
So I'm putting Washington in.
Yeah, I saw that coming.
My Final Four. And then my debate was Ohio State's, does their case get damaged by Oklahoma losing to Iowa State, doesn't it?
It does.
I'm not going to put Ohio State in, but I'm looking at the list of teams.
And I think they're going to lose to Penn State.
I think that is likely. I think, I don't like Penn State's chances because I think they lose somewhere. Okay? So I'm going to pick San Diego State. Not. They're going to lose this week to Boise. Plus, they'd never vote them in. I'm going to go with my last selection. I'm going to jump on with you, Penn State.
There you go.
I think that's likely they still lose. I really want to pick Wisconsin. Forget it. Forget Penn State. On Wisconsin. I'm picking the Badgers.
Really?
Well, yeah, we've talked about they've got a favorable schedule. I think they've got a good chance.
They do have a favorable schedule, that's for sure. I mean, they could come through this thing unscathed.
Yeah, and then they just have to win the championship game. Which again
is no
gimme.
So it's basically two tough games. They got Michigan at home.
They got Michigan at home.
And then a conference championship.
And then the conference championship against let's just call it Penn State. Imagine for a second if an undefeated Penn State is playing an undefeated Wisconsin, basically for a spot. That's the
Big
Ten.
Oh, yeah, the winner goes. The winner goes.
The Big Ten dream scenario is that, right? At this point. Not probably how they drew it up at the beginning of the year. But you do not want, say a two-loss team in there.
No.
Which could happen mathematically.
Yeah,
if you look
and looking at the teams, that could happen, and that two-loss team could win. And you do not want that.
This could be the scenario where this could be the year where the SEC gets two teams.
Well, yeah, if you have a two-loss team wins the Big Ten championship game, I believe we see two SEC teams in there.
So here's a team neither of us has brought up is Georgia.
Yeah, that's the team.
So let me ask you a question, though. Okay. Georgia loses one game to Alabama. Well, let me look at the SEC standings here for a second. Because that'll be interesting to look at.
Georgia on their schedule, I mean, yeah.
There's a lot of ways that Georgia can lose, and that's why I have not picked them. It's not that I actually think they're a bad team or aren't maybe even the best team left that we're not talking about. Okay? It's really a matter of just who they've got left on their schedule, right? Now, they don't have to play Alabama in the regular season, okay? But they still have to play, Florida, Auburn, at Auburn, and that tricky game against Georgia Tech. Is that a tricky game?
I think if you're Georgia and you walk into and you go out to Atlanta undefeated on November 25th, you win that game.
Yeah, I would hope so. But let's.
So, I mean, the big question mark left on their schedule, in my opinion, is Auburn on the road.
Auburn on the road. That's the big question. Auburn has played very, 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 very well this season with, of course, that the only loss against Clemson. So let me play two SEC scenarios for you, okay? What happens if Georgia beats Auburn, okay, and then loses a close game mm-hmm. to Alabama for their only loss of the year? Is that better than an undefeated TCU?
It may be, but I think that the committee takes the undefeated conference champion.
Okay, but it beats any other one loss, even conference champion, doesn't it?
It may.
I think it does.
Does it beat a one loss Big Ten champion?
Maybe, depending on who that team is and who their loss was to. If it's Ohio State and their one loss was to Oklahoma, I think it does.
Yeah, you're right.
At home to Oklahoma?
I think it beats a one loss Big 12 champ. Probably beats a one loss Pac-12 champ.
Yeah, again, depending on when and how the loss happened.
And who it is, yeah.
So here's another scenario, Matt. Auburn. Okay? So look at Auburn's schedule. They've lost to Clemson. They've got Alabama to end the year. Okay? What happens? Obviously, if they beat Bama, they've got it. All they have to do is win the title game, right? The SEC championship game to get in, right? Say they go undefeated right. Till Bama beat Bama. That even as a one-loss team with the one-loss. The SEC champ, barring something weird like a two-loss team, is in, right? They're going to be in.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine they go through, Matt, and they lose. They beat Bama and then, lose to Bama, and they are only losses of the year. Okay, they're not going to make the playoff as a two-loss team. But imagine their only losses of the year are Clemson and Alabama. Like, you could make the argument they're the third best team in the country. And how could anyone prove you wrong?
So does that mean they got to get in?
No, you can't take it.
They won't.
You can't take a two-loss team. It's a fun scenario. The thing is, with all these scenarios, more chaos is likely to happen, right? It's very likely that Auburn could lose three more games this year, right?
Right, but then I think in that case, the argument is, hey, look, they already had their shot at both those teams, and they didn't get it done.
Yeah.
Somebody else gets the shot.
Totally, and I agree with it. You shouldn't put them in as a two-loss team into a four-team playoff. If it was an eight-team playoff... Yeah, I would say you'd have a hard time keeping them out of an 18 playoff. But as a 14 playoff, like you said, you got a shot to beat Clemson on the road, granted, and you had Auburn at home and you couldn't get it done. So anyway, well, Matt, we're over again because that's what we do apparently is go over an hour. That's how we roll lately. Anything else before we sign off?
I think it's all been said.
It's all been said, and notice we're not talking about baseball because I'm depressed about baseball. Red Sox got eliminated today. Nats lost today. Yankees win. I mean, basically, it's not a great, like, besides the Patriots winning, nothing's really going well for my sports teams right now.
And listen, when the Yankees win, nobody wins, okay?
I completely agree with you, but there's a few Yankees fans that might disagree with you on that one.
That's fine. They're welcome to do that.
They're welcome to do that and be wrong.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, we got asked if Chris Sale could win two games in the playoffs. I'm not sure, but he can certainly lose two. Boy. Boy, Bay. You know, who knew the best start of the basically we had no good starts, the Red Sox. There wasn't a single good start. The best pitching performance we had was David Price throwing four innings of relief.
Which was awesome, by the way.
Oh, that was a fun game. Ended up being a blowout, but it didn't feel like a blowout for most of the game because it wasn't, right? It was close, but anyway. All right, Matt. Well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. You can catch this show and my other podcast at desertnews.com/podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at @BYU_RiseShout, on Facebook at facebook.com/RiseAndShout. And we're going to do a halftime show, right?
Oh, yeah. The halftime show is the best.
Yeah, so we're both on the halftime show. If you haven't watched the last couple of weeks, we do it together because Facebook Live lets you add a person. So we do it. And last week we talked about my hair. So who knows what we'll talk about this week.
Your hair looked great, by the way.
Yeah, so join us on Facebook at facebook.com/RiseAndShout at halftime of the Mississippi State game. Thank you for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.
Just a small town girl living in a lonely world. She took the midnight train going anywhere. Just a city boy born and raised in South Detroit.